I'm Theo Greenlee, a reporter with the Alaska Desk. That's a joint reporting effort from Alaska Public Media and KUCB, where I work in on Alaska, and other public radio stations in Anchorage, Fairbanks, Haines, and the Aleutians. It allows us to connect you with the issues happening in communities all across the state. You can hear our stories during the morning news, Alaska News Nightly, or online at alaskapublic.org. The Alaska Desk is only possible with the support of grants and listeners like you. Thank you.
Coming up on Hometown Alaska, host Dave Waldron is antsy to stuff himself silly with delicious Thanksgiving dishes, or at least talk about them. He's joined by award-winning food writer and journalist Julie O'Malley to discuss the merits and possibilities of pie, from tips and tricks to favorite places to pick up a slice. And on State of Art, join me, Ammon Swenson, for a conversation with Music Alaska director Marion Call. We hear about the upcoming Alaska Music Summit, music video submissions, and digital venue resources. That's all coming up next on Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media.
Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm Dave Waldron, and today we're gearing up for Thanksgiving. This is the time of year where many of us are plotting every last morsel that we'll be either cooking or simply enjoying with our friends and family. And while so much of the spotlight is given to the turkey and the side dishes, there are some of us that are biding our time and strategically saving room in our stomachs for dessert. So on today's show, we'll be celebrating that final dish that so many people claim they don't have any room for. And what more iconic Thanksgiving is there of a dessert than pie? That is going to be the first question I put to my guest today, who is Julie O'Malley, a James Beard Award-winning writer who has written for the Anchorage Daily News. She's also authored the book, The Whale and the Cupcake, Stories of Subsistence, Longing and Community in Alaska. Julia, welcome back to Hometown Alaska.
Thanks.
It's great to have you back. So, Julia, is there a dish that sums up Thanksgiving dessert better than the pie?
I mean, that was like a softball. Because
I always start with a softball.
Yeah, exactly, because there is only pie. I mean, maybe there are some other things, but there's pretty much only pie.
Oh, okay.
I mean, in my mind. But you are talking to a activated pie zealot. I have very clear pie opinions and have moved into like a kind of a revolutionary pie period in my life.
Yeah, and that's why we're having you on right now
to
discuss this exact thing. You're kind of on a pie quest of sorts right now.
Well, right now I'm working on this cherry pie because it's a family recipe, but also cherries in Alaska and Anchorage's food history are kind of representative of this thing where certain foods just become really special.
Mm-hmm.
And climate change has allowed us to grow stone fruit, which we do now. But 100 years ago, no one was growing cherries. Cherries came as a special canned item. And actually, they only started to be available probably around the 1940s. But they showed up and they were really special and they were saved for kind of a holiday or a special celebratory occasion. So my grandmother, who came here in the 50s, made a particular cherry pie. And then my mom made that same pie, too. My grandmother's dead and my mom can't remember the recipe. So I've been trying to work on it. And I made one that was really beautiful, but really tasted bad yesterday. Luckily, you can photograph a beautiful pie that tastes bad and no one knows, but I still have to have a good recipe for the paper. So I'm in process.
Right. So you're writing this recipe and it's going to be on the Anchorage Daily News. Yes.
Yes.
But you're also on another kind of like pie adventure involving your newsletter you write, right?
Right. So I have this newsletter. I've had it since February and it's just kind of turned into this thing. It's the coolest thing I do every week. And I write about food and culture in Anchorage and Alaska. And this coming newsletter is going to be completely devoted to pie. and all of the pies that I like. And I'm going to tell the truth. I'm going to tell a personal truth, which is that I don't like cooking Thanksgiving dinner. And in fact, I like it so little that I am going to buy the whole damn thing. Oh, can I say that on the air?
Yes, you can. Yeah.
This year, I think I'm going to buy the whole thing and I'm just going to make pie and not like a little bit of pie. I'm going to make enough pie that like no one in my family, all of us together, still couldn't eat it, that we have too much pie, and I'm going to invite my friends over and I'm going to have them eat the pie too. Mm-hmm. And so basically it's like a pie Thanksgiving, or maybe just like a whole turned on its head Thanksgiving where pie is the main idea and then the Thanksgiving dinner is like the side note.
Yeah, I was surprised to hear about that, because we were talking on the phone earlier today and to find out that you don't really like to cook for Thanksgiving. I think a lot of people that have read your writing would assume that you're prepping for 24 hours and cooking for 24 hours straight.
Yeah, exactly. And you might. A person might. But then I've done that for years, and I actually have a big, ginormous family, and it is such a total production. And then it just like shoots out the cannon. There it is. Everybody eats it. 20 minutes later, you got so many dishes, you're exhausted. And it's like, it doesn't also matter. Like the turkey, it's never going to be an A-plus turkey, because there's no such thing as A-plus turkey. Turkey's always dry, bottom line. And it's either a lot of dry or a little bit dry. But especially if you have a huge family and you're cooking a massive turkey. Mm. And people, this is controversial. Like, people are going to disagree with this.
Oh, I can tell people will disagree with this.
Yeah, exactly. But in my opinion, if you have a turkey that is more than 15 pounds, it's just never going to be that good. And you have that. That's why I used to cook two turkeys. But then you're cooking two turkeys.
Yeah.
Anyway. It seems overhyped to me, Thanksgiving dinner. But pie is glorious. And so that is how I feel. I'm in the middle of my life. It's a reckoning time. I'm telling truths. And the truth is, the only thing I like about Thanksgiving is pie. And I don't just like it. Like, I love pie.
Yeah. And where did that start? I mean, you're saying that you're finding out about it. You're having this revelation.
I'm just
revelation
telling the truth
now,
about it. Like, I feel like I can just be honest now.
Yeah. But have you always loved pie?
Yes.
Yeah.
Pies always felt really special. In my family, people made pies. Pie was like, made you cool. It was a sort of social currency. And I am still not as good as my family members. Some of them have died now. But I feel like I'm coming into my own as a pie maker. Like, and everything I know about pie, I picked up from my people. I didn't try to learn it from a book or a YouTube video. Like, I leaned into the way that people did it. So my mom was a really good pie maker. My uncle is a noted pie maker, a pie rabbi, you might say. People come to him with their pie problems, and he like untangles it for them. He lives in Girdwood. And so I learned from them, and it feels, the thing about food that we talked about before is like, food is not actually food. It's like something else. And it carries all these other things. It carries memory and emotion and identity. It carries a sense of place. It carries language and culture, all these things. And for me, pie carries this very revered skill in my family, a kind of competency that has been a challenge to continue on. But also, if I didn't do it well, I would be disgracing my lineage. Like, I have to be good at pie.
You come from literal pie royalty. You said that they call your uncle your Pinus.
Yeah, Uncle Tommy is known as his Pinus.
Okay. I mean, those are some big shoes to fill.
Yeah, I mean, I'll never be at his level. Like, he's unusual, but.
Why so serious about the pies?
Why? Well,
yeah, like,
I don't know.
Where did it come from? How many generations are we talking about here?
I don't know. I mean, it's just like what I remember in my memory. So my grandmother was known for making. She wasn't the greatest cook, Lydia, my mother's mother, but she was known for making pies. And my other grandmother, Virginia, also an Alaskan, came here before. And she was definitely not known for cooking, and in fact, known for cooking poorly. But even so, she also made pies. So anyway, I don't know. Something about it.
There is something about it. I just love pie in general as well. Well, I want to talk about specifically the recipes that you uncovered and all the great things you found while you're doing your research. But I'm going to save specific recipes till after the break. For now, I want to talk about your newsletter. How did you come up with it? And, you know, it is food-centric, but it's not all about food. I think I read one of your recent ones, which I love the title of. It was Riding in Cars with Boys, Hungry Teenage Boys, Notes on Not Giving Up on Dinner, Wu-Tang, Blacklight Yoga, Pear Tarts, Donating Traditional Foods, You Pick Dog Commands, Blueberries, and Homemade Refried Beans. So where does your inspiration come from for these newsletters?
I love my town. I think that's where it starts. And food is what I know, but food is this entree into all these different worlds and things. So the newsletter is always going to serve people who are trying to cook and eat and share and eat at restaurants and shop at Costco. It serves those people. But it also kind of looks at the culture where all that happens, which happens to be Anchorage and Alaska. So I guess that's where it comes from. And I felt like that conversation, for a variety of reasons, like wasn't really happening, certainly not happening off social media. And I hate social media. So I wanted to move to a platform where I could have that kind of community that was not meta. Mm-hmm. So that's what started it. And my friend Nat, and a number of friends, but my friend Nat, who also has a newsletter, was like, who also wants a cut in any newsletter proceeds because of this. But he was like, you should totally do it. And so I did, thinking it would not be a thing. But it's totally turned into a thing. It is like my favorite thing.
Did you tell your kids that Wu-Tang is for the children? I just have to ask that question.
No, I just played it for them in the car. So basically, I just showed them that it's for the children.
And their reaction?
They like it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they like it. So,
in addition to the newsletter, I understand you're also currently a writer in residence at the Anchorage Museum.
Yes.
So how does that work? What are you writing currently, and how does it work to be a writer at the museum?
The museum has just provided me with space and a little bit of support that's allowed me to spend a couple of years researching how our food culture around salmon, our relationship to salmon, is changing, and how we are innovating and surviving and holding on as climate change makes salmon runs variable, vanishes them, some of them. And so it documents Alaskans grappling with climate change around the issue of salmon, which is, I think, our most important food here. And so I have been mostly traveling, interviewing people, doing research about the history of fisheries for the last couple of years. And hopefully, God willing, I'll get my proposal done pretty soon. And it will then potentially find a publisher.
Okay. So salmon and pie are your focus.
Yeah. So salmon's the other half of my week is related to salmon. Yeah.
I think that is interesting because I've had some really great salmon pie in my life.
Whole thing. That's a whole thing. P-Rock. Yeah.
Do savory pies have any business at the Thanksgiving table?
Not at mine.
Not at yours.
Yeah. I mean, actually, I've had people tell me that they make salmon pie as their main entree in some places. You know, that's like a celebration dish that you could use like in place of turkey or that kind of thing. But this is all about not savory pies right now.
Okay. Well, after this short break, we're finally going to get to the crown jewel of pies and all those great recipes that have been selected by my guest, Julie O'Malley. I'm Dave Waldron, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm Dave Waldron, and today we're celebrating pie and its place on many of our Thanksgiving tables. With me is Julie O'Malley, who is a freelance food writer and also the author of The Whale and The Cupcake, Stories of Subsistence, Longing, and Community in Alaska. She also writes a weekly newsletter, which we've been talking about, and her most recent one, which you can read this Wednesday, will feature pie and Thanksgiving, of course. So let's get into it, Julia. What are the best recipes that you found while researching for the newsletter?
This is highly subjective. So let's talk about a little bit. There's like sort of two genres, two like directions. I feel like there's like a fruit pie and then there's like a custard pie. So the fruit pies, what makes them what they are is that they have a fruit filling, you use some kind of a thickener, and, you know, they may or may not have a lattice crust, but they're sort of like the classic pies. So we're talking maybe like an apple pie or a peach pie or any of the berry pies, right? So that would be like one direction.
Right.
The other direction, which if I'm going to be honest, I'm a little bit more enamored with, is the sort of custard pie line, because there's so many variations. There's variations in both realms, right? But, you know, you got your pumpkin, you know, and we got to have it. And Tommy, my uncle, is like, he's secretly anti-pumpkin. He's like, it's basically like mashed potatoes. You got to have it, but like, although he, you know, he sort of, and I do this too, I think informed by him, we put a little bit of bourbon in those pies, or he puts rum and I put bourbon, but.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Nice.
And then you've got like the creams. You got the banana cream. You got the chocolate cream. You got a coconut cream. I'm actually flirting with potentially adding a coconut cream to this year's lineup because I've never made one. Key lime, which is kind of out there. I feel like that may not quite fit the traditional Thanksgiving thing, but you could make that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and then there's a bunch of other unusual or sort of off the beaten path pies that are custard based. Like an ube pie. So it'd be like kind of like a sweet potato pie, but made with ube. Or, you know, I make like a eggnog pie. So it's like a custard pie that tastes like eggnog. It's like really seasonal. And wow. Then I also make a matcha pie that is, again, like a custard pie that way.
Wow.
And we're not even getting into the tarts. I feel like tarts could be part of the conversation, but let's just stick to pie.
Yeah, I mean, just give me that eggnog pie and I'm set, I think.
I think you are, because it's pretty good. Yeah.
So how many pies have you baked in the last month, I have to ask?
Well, I'm just ramping up. So I've maybe only done 3 so far.
Okay.
Because I'm just trying to repeat this here cherry pie, I keep on messing up.
Oh, we spend a lot of time on the same pie.
Yeah. One of the things that's interesting I've been thinking about, because I don't really drink all that much, but I keep going to the liquor store, is the role of alcohol in flavoring pies. And so this cherry pie, if I'm going to like get it spot on, it uses a liqueur called Kirsch, which is like a cherry liqueur. And I tried to sub in other sorts of things, and that's what's made it taste bad, or made it like not taste right. But that's one of the weird, sketchy investments a person has to make when you become really into pie, is this kind of collection of strange liqueurs. Like, I have a lot of weird alcohol for somebody who like barely drinks, and it's expensive and you only use a little bit. Mm-hmm. So yeah. You know, that's just one of the liabilities of pie obsession.
Yeah, I put Grand Marnier in my cranberry sauce that I make every year, and that literally I just take a tablespoon of it. So I don't know how many years I've had it in the cabin. I should probably check.
It lasts.
Like, how many decades are we talking about?
You can buy that. That one's one that comes in a small container. You can get those.
It does, yeah. Pretty reasonable. Well, I was just talking to my wife about this because she knew that I was about to be talking pies today. And I was asking her, like, what are the biggest, you know, misconceptions about making pie from scratch? And she said the biggest one is that it's hard. People think it's more difficult than it really is. But I disagree to a degree, because she's a good baker herself. But I've always found pie to be very challenging and intimidating, and even really great chefs will tell you, like, yeah, they're a great chef, but they're not a great baker, or they're a terrible baker. So what is it for you? Do you find them challenging?
Well, I think the thing that's hard, that we're just talking around the elephant in the room, which is the crust.
Right.
Crust making is really hard. And one of the things about pie is there aren't a lot of other realms in which, like, regular bakers are getting into the kind of chemistry and mechanics of a pastry, which has a lot to do with fat and the temperature of fat and how it mixes with flour. And there are lots of different variations on how to make crust. And, like, the less you touch the butter and the bigger the butter is, like, and then the more you fold the crust and how you keep it cold, all of that contributes to both the texture or lack of texture, sort of bad vibes of, you know, like, chewy crust. But all of that's actually pretty hard to do sometimes in a regular kitchen. And I will admit that, like, I can't stick a crust by hand. And I've made a ton of pie. I suck at it. I just can't get it. And my uncle does it by hand. My mother, my other uncle, my aunts, everybody does it by hand. But I just can't. And so I came up with my own system, which makes a pretty good pie crust, but it doesn't have like the loft. The other thing is, people are pretty used to like buying pie crust, and that pie crust does not, that sort of Pillsbury stuff, really shiny on the outside, and it doesn't rise. So you don't get the separation between the layers. And so if you've never actually made a pie crust, you probably don't know what pie crust tastes like.
If you've never made it.
Yeah, if you've just bought it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of controversial aspects to this one, too, but I'm just going to say it, and it works. you take a stick of cold butter, and it's salted butter that I use directly from the refrigerator, and you put it in your food processor with 1 cup of all-purpose flour. You also can decide, depending on what kind of pie you're going to make, you decide if you want to put like a teaspoon of sugar and 1/4 teaspoon of salt or something like that. You can add salt and sugar, but you don't have to, and you don't freak out. You just turn on the food processor and you allow it to make those ingredients into a meal. And this is what's controversial, because people who are really into pie like that ragged quality with the different pieces of different sized butter. So like they like to cut the butter or kind of like use their fingers to make the butter pea-sized. Mm-hmm. When you use a Cuisinart, it's more of a regular texture. And it can get really small really quick. And so you don't want it to get too small. But once you get it into a pretty regular meal, like all of the butter is combined with the flour, then you take ice cold vodka and you drizzle it into the running Cuisinart. And as you drizzle it, the meal will start to coalesce. And right at that moment, you stop. You empty out the Cuisinart and you press all of the dough together into a puck, like a flat kind of disc. And I usually pour it right onto some parchment paper, and then I fold the parchment paper up and I shove it in the fridge. And I don't get it too cold in the fridge. I just keep it refrigerator temperature-ish while I'm preparing the filling, so that you can roll it out. And for me, because I'm a person of short stature and I don't have a lot of force when I roll out my pie dough, I was given by my dad, thank you, Dad, a marble rolling pin, and it has 2 cool functions. One, it stays cool, and the other is it's really heavy, so it gives me a lot of power to quickly roll out the crust. And so those are sort of my pie dough tricks. Yeah. Also, like, I kind of like an imperfect lattice top, you know, because whatever, it's Thanksgiving. A pie is like a Valentine, you know?
Is it?
Yeah, or a greeting card. Like, the person who gives you the greeting card and, like, just signs at the bottom after there's, like, the hokey message. Like, a pie that looks too perfect is like that, you know?
Yeah, right. You want the deeper meaning and the, you know, the smudged ink and...
like, something crossed out.
Yeah, right.
You know, a little bit, of, like, some backwards letters that your kids put on there, you know? It's like...
Yeah. I love that you said the most controversial when you're talking about the Cuisinart method, but then you're like... But then I pour in the vodka. Is that not the controversial part?
People use vodka in pie crust. It's like, because usually you might use water. Some people, you might use apple juice, like really cold water apple juice, because it's the thing that that kind of sticks the pie together. But the alcohol evaporates differently because of the temperature that causes it to evaporate. And something about that, it gives it, this is my theory, and I'm kind of making it up, and it could be like placebo effect. I don't know, but... I think it makes the pie loftier and maybe a little sturdier, too. Like, there's a whole thing in pie making where, like, if your crust is, like, sturdy enough that you can lift it out of the pan, then you're, like, varsity. I don't know.
Well, I want to talk about some of our Alaska-known pies. We got a lot of well-known pie in our state. The Double Muskie in Girdwood's got their peanut butter pie, which is pretty revered. The Talkeetna Roadhouse, of course, is known for their pies. And Wild Scoops, you know, makes an ice cream pie. Those things sell out every year around Thanksgiving.
I feel that's like right now part of the pie canon.
Yeah, totally. So what are some of your favorite places to pick up a pie when you're not the one that has to make it?
Oh, I don't know that I buy pie. I don't know. I don't mean to be weird. I might buy an ice cream pie because I don't really make those. You know, another thing that I like to eat pie on the road. Like, in particular, roadhouses are like an Alaska tradition, and pie is part of that sort of roadhouse fare where you're like on the highway and you pull in and you get into the place and, oh my God, I'm totally going there in my mind right now. There's a pie case and it rotates and it's cold and there are individual slices in there. And you go in and you eat your, like, fish and chips or burger or whatever, and then you get to go get a piece of pie. And I feel like I've experienced that, like, in the Glen Allen zone. There's a place that I'm thinking of. And I remember as a kid driving Homer-style ways somewhere in the past there, stopping to get pie like that. Anyway, those pies are berry pies, and they are often have often used wild berries or not, and they sometimes use like a pudding or a jello as a thickener.
You said that you know of a kind of secret ingredient used as a thickener from your pinus uncle Tommy, you said, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
Can you share what that is? I'm just curious. Are you allowed to speak of this?
Yes.
Okay.
And it is King Arthur Baking Company's Pie Enhancer, which you cannot get here, and the shipping's stupid, and he is like, you're paying like three times as much as the actual thing to ship it. And I just tried to buy it, and it was like you paid as much shipping as the product costed.
Yeah, hate that.
But, you know, he'll give it around because he teaches pie making. But I got my friend who's coming for Thanksgiving to bring me a couple from New York, where she was able to get it for cheap.
So bringing that pie enhancer on the plane,
yeah.
You're getting it through customs.
Yes, exactly.
What is in pie enhancer? Like, what is it?
I think the main ingredient is tapioca flour, which you can find in town, but it just works really good. There's something so satisfying about a pie that you slice and it like stays together.
Yeah.
I like that. Mm-hmm. And that's hard to do. I mean, basically you have to let it cool, which nobody does for one thing. Just to see how much it's going to set up. But then if you use this pie enhancer, it just like, I don't know, it just takes it over the top somehow.
It just looks like a cartoon slice of pie.
Yeah.
Just
sometimes
sitting there perfectly.
You want that. You know, that's the kind of perfection I want. Like, I don't need a perfect lattice crust, but I want like a pie that gels up,
mm-hmm.
You know?
Me too. Well, even though we've spent a lot of time talking about pie, Julia, I understand that you have a different dessert that holds a really sweet spot in your heart, and it's kind of an Alaska tradition too, many at this point, but I wasn't really familiar with it. So what can you tell us about this dessert?
Oh, yeah. Well, I was going to say like there is one Thanksgiving thing that's sort of near and dear to me that I will make, which is this Jell-O salad. That's right. I said it. And I'm going to not only do I say it, but I wrote this recipe for Edible Alaska and I put it on my website and it's hot. Like it's one of the most popular recipes on my website, and it's always at Thanksgiving that people come to it, but it's from the O'Malley side of my family, and it's just a salad. It's not really a salad. It's a Jell-O dish, but in Alaska, when there was not good fresh produce in the winter, people frequently made salads, and I am using air quotes right now, out of canned or stored fruits or vegetables, which is a whole other gross thing, but and they would make them with Jell-O. And if you look in Alaska's old cookbooks, you will see that the salad section is primarily Jell-O salad. But this one is like two layers. The first is sort of like maybe you would use like a cherry Jell-O if you can find it, kind of hard now, with wild cranberries, and then that you have in your freezer. And then there is a thin layer of sweetened sour cream. And then the next layer is like just another flavor of Jell-O, probably a raspberry Jell-O with wild raspberries. Oh, and there's beautifully crushed pineapple in it, which just like adds the perfect retro thing. But I dare you to not like it. I dare anyone to not like it. It's like addictive and awesome. And it kind of goes well with the savory character of other Thanksgiving foods. Like it exists in the genre of like cranberry sauce. But you slice it and eat it and it's the bomb. So I do make some allowances in my Thanksgiving dessert.
It sounds great. You know, and speaking of shelf stable foods and pie,
mm-hmm.
You mentioned to me before that you make a tang pie.
Oh, this one is
out of the powdered tang.
This is hot. I first found this recipe, I want to say, in my friend Gretchen's my friend Gretchen is in her 80s and she gives me a lot of cool stuff. But I want to say the inspiration for this recipe came out of her recipe box in Homer. She lives in a place outside Homer. But basically, again, people are trying to make something delicious and they would maybe make a pie crust and then they would make this kind of very light creamsicle flavored pudding that would go inside and it would involve, I want to say that it involves like some condensed milk, so shelf stable and tang, which, of course, we love here for various reasons. When I was a child, we thought it was a health-giving beverage that you would drink when you were sick. We drank it hot. But it was a very kind of central piece of the kind of food tech of the mid-century. It was a astronauts drank it, mushers drank it. It was shelf-stable. It provided you with vitamin C, especially if you weren't getting a lot of oranges and that kind of thing wherever you were. Mm-hmm. So Alaskans really embraced it. I use whipped cream on my Tang pie, but you would probably, in the time when this pie first sort of came into the imagination, use Dream Whip, which is a powder that you would then like mix with like water, and it becomes kind of like a Cool Whip vibe. Or you would use Cool Whip, which is still really common in rural Alaska to use Cool Whip in pie.
Yeah, my uncle swears by Cool Whip still. You know, he will eat whipped cream, but if it's between Cool Whip and whipped cream,
It's sturdy.
All in on Cool Whip.
Yeah. It's sturdy. It's a whole thing. Yeah. And you know, the thing about it is like, especially for those of us who grew up kind of in the 70s and 80s or whatever, those foods were attached to them not because they're good or good for you, but because they carry memory.
Sure.
Which is its own kind of nutrition,
yep.
Frankly.
I agree.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of, is there one pie? I know it's hard to pick. If there was one pie you had to pick that really sums up that feeling, that Thanksgiving feeling for you, and just like your basic love of pie that you obviously have, what would that be?
I mean, I have to have pumpkin. I still kind of feel like it's the basic little black dress of the Thanksgiving table, but it has to be a certain way, like really cold, has to have a high fat content. It needs to be really spicy, and I also like a little bit of booze in there, and I want it with whipped cream. Like if I was gonna have to have something, it couldn't be like and it can't be all that sweet. And I kind of like to make it with actual pumpkin that I roast instead of the canned stuff. If I was like gonna really do it up and make one pie, I guess I would go with that, even though that may seem pedestrian to some.
Julia, obviously you're celebrating this Thanksgiving with pie, wide variety of pies. But I mean, this is Thanksgiving. We're talking about what are some things you're thankful for this year? See, like,
when I think about a pie, I think about the shape of it. There's something like symbolic about a pie. That idea that you make one thing and then you cut it into pieces and you give somebody some of it. It's kind of an ancient sort of symbolism. And at this time in my life, if I'm thinking about what I am most grateful for, I want to look around the table and see those people eating pieces of this pie I made. So I guess it almost in a weird way is more about the sharing of the pie and the way that pie is shared than it even is about what kind of pie it is to begin with.
I want to thank my guest, Julia O'Malley. She is a freelance food writer, and she writes that newsletter where you can find all those pie recipes that we've been talking about. Julia, thanks for coming in and helping us all celebrate pie together.
Thanks for having me, and happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. After this short break, we'll be back with State of Art. I'm your host, Dave Waldron, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media.
From Alaska Public Media, this is State of Art. Welcome to State of Art, your weekly dose of Anchorage arts and culture. I'm Ammon Swenson. Music Alaska is a statewide organization working to help musicians, venue owners, teachers, and music fans support and grow the Alaska music scene and industry. They've been building local music playlists, holding the Alaska Music Summit, and are working to expand their digital resources with things like statewide venue and festival information. I'm joined by Music Alaska director Marion Call to find out more about what they've been up to and how you can get involved. Let's have her break it down.
Alaska Music Summit is our gathering of Alaska music professionals. We get the musicians together, but we also get the music teachers, we get the venue owners, we get the records shops and the repair shops and the luthiers. There's so many people involved in making music, right? We get them all together to talk about the business of it, because otherwise we never talk to each other about it. That happens February 7th and 8th this year, and it's going to be at the Nave on Saturday the 7th. And then we have a networking and hangout event at Organic Oasis on Sunday the 8th, and that is a fantastic hang. It's a really good time.
Sticking with the Anchorage
Anchorage aspects, what can people from this town kind of expect from the experience that if they attend?
When you attend, I would say the highlight is seeing everyone else. Each year we try to program main stage content that's interesting. Like, let's hear from some venue owners. Let's hear from some recording engineers or some live engineers. Let's hear from the music photographers, you know. But at the same time, every year we realize just more and more we need to make more space for people to just see each other and talk. And that's why we have a whole Sunday dedicated to it now. But so it's getting together at the Nave with about 100 other people who work in music and having ideas, sharing problems, sharing solutions. Have you heard of this website? Did you know about this rule? Et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah,
we share nuts and bolts, like talks on how to deal with money in a band. Do you know how complicated that is?
Especially with dealing with separate entities and characters. And
Who's going to pay taxes? Who's not going to? You don't want to mess
whose
up their
name's
game. What
go
are you
going to
do?
Thing.
Like, we try and make recommendations for how to be professional and safe and take care of everyone in the music ecosystem and how to take yourself seriously as a musician, which means like managing your money properly and treating your bandmates well, having contracts for engagements so that you know who's expected to promote and you know when you're expected to show up and, you know, things like that. Just like in general, treating each other well and kindly. And there that involves professionalism. So we work a lot on that. We work on ways to get paid, what happens when you don't get paid, when it's okay to not get paid, how to do a good fundraiser. Like right now, there's a lot of fundraising happening for so many causes, including public media. And you want to have a fundraiser concert that actually raises funds and doesn't wind up actually costing the entity that you're fundraising for time and energy. So things like that. And but really the benefit is just getting together, honestly. Like I see amazing things come out of that every single time. I see artists get their first bookings who are really young. I see, you know, music teachers connecting with each other on scheduling and managing their studios. I see folks like talking to each other about, hey, this regulation, this has to change. How do we make progress on that? Right. So
so that's aspect.
Yeah, exactly. And our job is basically to both hold space for that and to bring in experts from the community and from outside to speak to the issues that we're having.
Yeah, and as far as I understand it, you're going to have some kind of interesting experts taking part. Did you want to maybe talk about some of the people that are going to be talking?
Sure. We're confirming some pretty cool guests right now, both from in and around Alaska, as well as visiting from outside. One I'm really excited about is our local representative, our Northwest representative from the Recording Academy. That's Timmy Dolan.
That? Yeah.
The Recording Academy. I'm so glad you asked. The Recording Academy, you probably know them for putting on the Grammys, right? The National Music Awards and the Latin Grammys. But you may not know that they also are musicians. It's kind of trade guild. Mm. They represent musicians and advocate to the federal government. So when there's a federal law having to do with music, people don't think about that too often, but like we need a body to do that. And the Recording Academy, that's their main job. For example, I'm a member of the Recording Academy and I'm a regional governor for the Recording Academy. So Alaska has a seat now on the Pacific Northwest Governor's Board for the first time in a long time. And I've been able to, for example, talk to Representative Begich's office or Senator Murkowski's office, Senator Sullivan's office to say, hey, so on these federal issues regarding music, for example, AI, for example, terrestrial radio royalties, things like that. There is federal law that sometimes comes through that impacts musicians. And when there's a reason to draft a new law or something, that's part of the Recording Academy's job, and it's their job to lobby for it too. And there's so much advocacy to be done in so many areas of life right now, but music advocacy is one where luckily it's a pretty bipartisan push. Like if one legislator is not jiving with you when you talk to them about we should be more like Iceland or Portland, then you can talk to them about we could be more like Texas or Nashville because they also really value their music ecosystem, right?
Yeah.
And Alaska could be this way. So that's part of why we stay engaged in those federal pushes for like legislation about royalties, about AI, about the right to if someone makes a song and pretend it's yours, what recourse do you have? Things like that.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like it's not necessarily you're trying to completely change the Alaska music ecosystem as much as kind of modernize it and bring it up to the level that some of these other maybe more successful or more well-known music centers, what they're already doing, essentially.
Oh, absolutely. Alaska has the most amazing music scene. I will sing its praises to the sky. We have incredible music here, and there are always new bands coming up. I know it can be frustrating to see people sometimes like leave the state to pursue a career, but for every time that happens, we have something new and incredible happening, always. And Alaska is also a little bit special in that we do it for us. In a lot of other states, the number of music festivals is decreasing. In Alaska, it's increasing. I find that amazing, right? We also have a number of venues coming online now. There's a new push for all ages venues and all ages festivals. We love to see it. And what we do is we look at our neighbors. We look at Canada. We look at Iceland. We look at Washington and Oregon and Idaho. And we look at Hawaii. And we say, okay, what advantages do we have? What disadvantages do we have? And how can we support what already flourishes here? And there's a lot of simple things that we can do. One of the most basic is for everyday Alaskans, that means you, dear listener, everyday Alaskans to start just incorporating more Alaska-created music into their background listening. Right? Or into their social media diet. Because a ton of people will go out to a concert to hear their favorite band, but they never remember to actually throw it on their streaming or on their device or in their car, right? Turning on that music, actually, it brings royalties into the state from outside and it pays that band. So if you're making an Instagram story, you get to choose the background music, right? You could choose an Alaskan artist. If you're making a TikTok, you get to choose the background music. How long since you remember to choose an Alaskan artist instead of a top 40?
Yeah. Or what about maybe like retail stores or something like that? Even just having stuff on in the background,
right?
Type of a thing?
Or yeah. Just... There's actually a law in Canada that 10% of all broadcast material has to be Canada made. And that's how Canada, with really small population, supports its own really robust music ecosystem, right? I don't know if we're going to have a law anytime soon in Alaska, but I think we could make it a norm. We could make it the norm that, like, if you own a small business and you have, you know, your license to play your music on the overhead, right? One day a week you can play Alaska music, or like regularly you can invite your employees, make your own playlist of your favorite Alaskan bands, and we'll plug that in, right?
Yeah.
That's our goal. That's why Music Alaska spends a lot of time indexing Alaskan artists to make them easy to find.
Yeah, which has been difficult in the past if maybe you weren't, didn't have your finger on the pulse of whichever scene. Something cool, though, in addition to just kind of bringing the scene, bringing the state up to more levels of places, yeah, like Portland, Seattle, Nashville, stuff like that or whatever, the country of Canada. you know, you are doing calls for music, not necessarily artists to submit their own music, but if you're a local music fan, you can send in music suggestions. So now, in addition to soliciting ideas for just, you know, music to add to your playlists and stuff, you're actually doing a call for local music videos from Alaska artists.
Absolutely. We use something called the Alaska Playlist Project. If you've never visited it, it's alaskaplaylistproject.com. We have been using that to solicit new tracks from artists, but also just from the general public. Like, you can submit a track of your favorite band, you know, or
of
your cousin's band.
I saw these guys last night. They were amazing. They've got an album.
We get that. We get that. We get people suddenly will, like, drop in and fill out, like, every track by an artist will, like, submit it to us to playlist. And what we do is we assemble those songs into appropriate playlists on Spotify and Deezer and, coming soon, Apple Music, coming soon, Bandcamp, and anywhere that we can playlist, basically, so that it's easy to listen to 3 hours of Alaska-made country music, or really easy to put on a couple hours of Alaskan hip-hop, really easy to put on a playlist of all Alaska Native artists, really easy to listen to, like, Fairbanks music. I love the Fairbanks playlist. It's so good. And really, like, we even have a playlist of artists who've been performing for more than 20 years. So that's, like, our older tracks, right?
Totally.
And, like, that is a time capsule. That is, like, Alaska 1999. If you want to be in a coffee house, if you want to be in Side Street Espresso in 1999, listening to Buddy Tabor and early Bumua, and, you know, it's so good. And so finding those artists, it can help jog your memory. It can help introduce you to new Alaskan artists you've never heard of, which albums are coming out now, as opposed to my brain is always kind of stuck 5 or 10 years ago.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that kind of collective memory of the community, you know, that, that's got to be important about being like, oh, yeah, what about these guys? You remember them? They were killing it maybe for a short period of time, but they did a fantastic album or something.
Absolutely. There's all these bands you don't want to forget. Bands are breaking up and changing and reassembling all the time. Like, this helps us to actually be able to, like, listen to and remember that music after an album release.
Yeah.
So I just would encourage people, no matter where you listen to music, I mean, ideally it's here or on KNBA, but if you listen to music on a platform of some kind, like, just remember to throw on Alaska music sometimes. Make your own playlist on your own platform. Or if you can use some of ours on, like I said, Spotify and Deezer, coming soon, Apple Music and Bandcamp, just incorporate that into your listening. And if you have an idea for a track that we should put on one of our playlists that isn't there yet, you can go to alaskaplaylistproject.com. You can fill out a form. It takes about 1 minute. Yeah. And you just need to give us the link to the song. And right now, we have a call open for music videos as well through December 31st. We are looking for Alaska-made, excellent, high-quality music videos. You know, we're talking probably multi-camera, you know, just like the ones that people put heart and soul into that really resonate, that have high-quality audio. Yeah. And we are assembling those into playlists as well so that it's easy to throw on a YouTube channel of Alaska artists. We're making a couple different ones, right? We make one that's like without swearing, for example, so you can throw it on in a public environment, and one with all the swearing so you can enjoy the full range of what we have to offer. And like more of a coffee house vibe versus more of an upbeat kind of like hard rock vibe or like hip hop. And we kind of make a few different channels so that it's easy to like curate something.
Yeah, to your interest. Like, whatever.
Exactly.
You don't have to like all Alaska music.
Absolutely. And we do have all genre playlists, which I love because that does throw surprises at you. And we have like, I need an ambient kind of chill vibe right now. We have that too.
Yeah.
So we have that already on Spotify and Deezer. We are working on it on YouTube. So if you know an amazing Alaska music video, again, that's alaskaplaylistproject.com. You'll see the, you know, link to submit music, link to submit a video. So many of these music videos are made and then only really seen for like a couple weeks.
Yeah.
And
maybe,
then they fall out of the algorithm.
Maybe like a promo when the album comes out or something like that. And it's this like cinematic, beautiful piece of art. And you're like, oh, and it's gone. Yeah,
I know.
They're out there.
I want to see those again. I want to make sure people are remembering this like high quality work that's being made. I want to see it at our film festivals. Yeah. I want to see it in the background in, you know, when people are having a party. You know, I want this to become the norm, to be celebrating the work that's being made here.
Well, and also it's just another way to highlight, you know, the collaborative nature of arts in Alaska, the fact that, you know, we've got these amazing musicians, we've got these amazing videographers and filmmakers, and it's just kind of helping the entire arts ecosystem here by just kind of showing kind of more of this artistic collaboration and stuff.
Oh, and people make things to be treasured. Like whenever I've made a music video, I have hoped that it means something to someone and that they watch it more than once or show it to somebody. Come here, you got to see this. So I want to see those that are made by other people because I have found so many Alaska music videos that I've been yelling at people, come here, you got to see this. Oh my gosh. It's incredible what people make. So beyond just curating these playlists and trying to encourage more local play among you, the citizenry listening right now, we also try to bring this to the tourism industry. So for example, we were at the Alaska Tourism Industry Association Conference. In December, we'll be at Alaska Municipal League Conference, reminding our kind of the powers that be, the cruise ship companies, the municipalities, the chambers of commerce, the hotels, reminding them all that they too can choose to incorporate more Alaska music into their tourism strategy, into their background, into their advertising. Why would you ever make an ad for tourism in Alaska and use stock music? How pathetic is that? Iceland would never. So we are going to So we are working to remind them that this music exists. And also part of why we're indexing it is so that if someone says, OK, fine, I will use Alaska music in my multi-million dollar ad, then we have a whole playlist of stuff in the right genre to pitch them so they can make a good choice, so that we have all the artists we can possibly offer on there, and they can choose something that matches their brand. Right. This is the beginning of being able to get better music licensing happening in Alaska. First, we make the lists. Gradually, we build momentum. You can see this momentum in the music scene right now. Yeah. It's really exciting. And then we get someday, you know, Princess Cruises doesn't dare make an Alaska travel ad without including Alaska music.
I mean, there's plenty of it. I remember when you were kind of first starting the playlist project and stuff and just, you know, kind of seeing stuff get added. And then, you know, at this point, it's like I'll go back and I'm like, holy smokes, this has come a long way. And I've definitely discovered a lot of Alaska artists that I had never heard of before, or maybe I had forgotten about. And like, oh my God, I forgot about these guys. Like, oh, that's amazing.
We have radio stations across the state that are actually using this. Their community DJs are using this to find new Alaska music. And I love hearing about that.
I must admit, when I'm sometimes looking for Anchorage music, I will peruse that fairly often. So
woo!
I'm one of them.
That's what we love to hear. We also have guest DJs sometimes dropping in. We have, you know, playlists by Karen Rackos from Girdwood, beloved DJ. We have a playlist by Katie Bosler from Juno, and one from Dave Emmert, who does Alaska's Fresh Catch, right?
I guess in addition to, you know, all the stuff happening with the summit, all the kind of information that you can get from it, the networking and whatnot. You're looking for some volunteers. What's the word on maybe getting involved if somebody's interested in doing something with the summit?
If you like this work, like if you like finding every Alaska artist there is, and if you like hosting big gatherings, feeding and getting a bunch of musicians together, keeping them organized, then you can get in touch. We're just info@musicalaska.org is the easiest way to reach us. That reaches me, but also the rest of my team. We have music summits in Fairbanks and Anchorage and Juneau now, and coming soon, Kenai Peninsula. We get all our musicians together, and if you enjoy hosting those gatherings or you like kind of behind the scenes doing that indexing of like tracks and keeping track of venues, making sure our lists are complete, get in touch. That's info@musicalaska.org.
Well, you've kind of touched on some of the tourism efforts. You know, something that I saw that I thought was really cool this last summer was this printout that was kind of this really beautifully done, comprehensive, statewide kind of festival list. I love physical media and stuff like that, but I thought that that was super cool. But now I do understand that in addition to some of these things to make it easier to find festivals, the website is going to be revamped. I know that that's still a thing, but what's kind of what is the dream and kind of future for some of these, this kind of venue festival resource that you folks have been working on?
Musicians have always needed a list of all the venues in state, right? And honestly, listeners have always needed a list. Like, where do I go tonight? What am I listening to tonight? So part of our mission is making that information really easy to find. So first of all, there already is a really great guide, a really great music calendar. A lot of people don't know, but akconcerts.com, a project we sponsor by Cody Heron Webb, tells you what is happening, all the music this week, every week, and it can arrive in your inbox as an email weekly. I cannot recommend this enough. akconcerts.com.
Great resource.
I can't believe how much work it is. Like, it's incredible. So,
and he does it for the love of the scene.
And has a Patreon. So, and we also have been indexing all the venues and all the festivals in state. So as of last year, we debuted a statewide festival list. Now part of our work is updating this festival list every year. So we have our kind of 2025 edition. Next year, we'll have our 2026 edition of these are all the festivals we know of that are happening every year or every other year in some cases and where they are. And there are over 90. Right? You could spend your whole year just doing this.
Festival to festival to festival.
Absolutely. And that this is amazing to me because the state level tourism agency only knew of about 15 and some of those didn't even happen anymore. And we were like, no, there's got to be more. And there are over 90 and new ones every year that are strong enough to recur. Yeah. So we now have a list of these up at musicalaska.org. And it's, you know, still kind of in beta. So pardon our dust as we make the front end visible to you guys of our big ugly databases. But keeping that information up to date is now part of our mission so that you can tell, you can plan ahead with one click. You can be at the website of the festival that you might, oh, that's right. I do want to plan to go to Haynes Brew Fest this year. Or, oh, I do want to plan on Blueberry Festival. You know, you can calendar it. Or if you're a musician, you can remember when to apply for it, right? If you're an artist, you can remember to get a vendor booth there. If you're a food truck, you can remember to plan to go there, right? I think that having that kind of information available is really important. So we've got that already up on our website. Next up is our venue list, which is a statewide venue list. The public-facing side is going to be kind of everywhere you could go to hear music probably tonight or this week, but we'll also have kind of a login side for music professionals and folks who plan events that is going to have a lot more venues because there are tons of places where you could have music, right?
But maybe it's not a nightly thing.
Yeah, it would probably be confusing to like a casual listener looking for music tonight to have like all of our First Friday galleries on there when they're only once a month, right?
You're like,
But it's important as a musician to know that you can, in fact, play at the Alaska Sea Life Center, and I have, and it's great. So,
it's amazing.
It's so much fun. And so listing those places where, like, you might hold a special event or a fundraiser or a tour event or a really unique event, right? Or where someone might want to have a wedding, which is a place a lot of musicians work, you know, which churches are open to concerts as opposed to just having their own services, right? Or, and which school auditoriums can the public
play in a bar? Like, let's find somewhere else, or
absolutely. So that's kind of our venue index. And we will probably have like the public side of that out, I think, by the time this airs. And the private side is going to be something special that we're debuting at the summit this year. So musicians will be able to use this as a booking tool and as an index tool. And we are going to be able to keep it updated by allowing people to submit edits and continuing to kind of do our own research.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like a continuing process, an evolving process, and maybe one that, you know, you're taking feedback on. Very, very collaborative with sounds like what people need and want. want?
People have been asking for this specifically for years, and that's why Music Alaska is doing it. We have needed these online resources. Sure. And in addition to these, we're just developing a lot of online resources. Like, you can see, for example, video of all our past summits at alaskamusicsummit.com. Cool. So if you're curious what happens at the Music Summit, or if you want to see that talk again about how to manage your money like it's a raft, then like you can go find that at alaskamusicsummit.com. And a lot of those resources are going to ultimately be on musicalaska.org. And we're mid-website build, so if you've ever been there, you will feel us. But it's a set of resources we've needed for a long time. We're talking about best practices, templates for contracts, templates for tour rosters, templates for contracts, templates for tour calendars, templates for, you know, all the things that musicians need on a weekly basis.
All the things you wish you had when you were a budding musician, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Things that I have slowly and painfully developed over 18 years, you know, and also with a lot of input from other musicians around the state. We've had other experts weigh in from a lot of different bands, a lot of different kinds of bands, from symphonies, from orchestras, from home teaching studios, right? Like, there's 1,000 ways to engage with music, and we all need to share resources a little bit more. So that's what the Alaska Music Summit exists for. Again, that's February 7th and 8th here in Anchorage. We'll also be in Fairbanks and Juneau this winter in January, February. And I hope you will come. I hope you'll participate. If you're interested in helping us plan what happens there and organize what happens there, if you like hosting events, it's so much fun. And you can catch us at info@musicalaska.org.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Marin, for coming in and telling us all about this. And I'm looking forward to it and appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. Wonderful to be here.
That was my conversation with Music Alaska director Marian Call, discussing what the organization has been up to and has coming up. We'll have links and more info on our webpage. And that's all for State of Art. I'm Ammon Swenson.
And that's all for our show. Thanks to my guest, Julia O'Malley. Ammon Swenson produces this show. You can find us at the Hometown Alaska page on alaskapublic.org, the Alaska Public Media app, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Dave Waldron, and thanks for listening.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.